Money Show with Bruce Whitfield on 702 for the curious on 92.7 and 106 FM.
Win 3,000 Rand if you're the Wiz of the Biz quiz. We'll play that at about 10 to 7 this evening. It's been a very, very busy week and given us plenty of material with which to torture you this evening as I pose to you some questions from the big stories of the week. We'll also bring you some of the best bits of the week, including My Heart is in Habana. I would break into song, but Brian Habana, what a great guest he was on Monday evening, Make Money Mondays, as he talked to us about sort of exiting his rugby career and getting into business and being quite apprehensive about that, but also talking to us about money and the way in which he's managed money and the way in which he thinks about money. It was a really good discussion. I thoroughly enjoyed it. And if you missed it, we'll bring you a bit of it this evening here on The Money Show. Better day for the Rand today after the rout of this week. The markets also staged a recovery. That recovery looked a bit tenuous at 11 o'clock last night when US markets closed, and it seemed as if we were going to be in for another rough day. And then things turned in Asia and Tencent went up and Nasdaq flew, and the rest, as they say, is history. So, yes, it's been a pretty good day on the JSE. In a moment, we're going to be talking to Gina Schoeman, the economist at Citibank, get a perspective from her as to what Moody's is likely to be thinking. Moody's, the ratings agency that hates us least, the only one that's got us on investment grade. No one's expecting it to cut. Is there any risk at all? That in a moment.
The Money Show with Bruce Whitfield. Live. Online. Smartphones. DSTV. At 92.7.
Another week, another finance minister. We started Monday with Nhlanhla Nene hanging on by his fingertips. He then offered his resignation to the president, Cyril Ramaphosa, who accepted. And it was unclear as to who the new finance minister would be. And a couple of us were chatting about it in the minutes leading up to the big announcement. Eyewitness News broke the story at 4:30 on Tuesday afternoon that Tito Mboweni had been spotted in the parliamentary precinct, and it seemed pretty likely that he was going to be the guy who would be managing the country's finances for the next while at least. And we're just talking about why it is that Tito Mboweni was going to be appointed. And it made sense in that Cyril Ramaphosa would have looked around the table at his cabinet and would have struggled, I suspect, to find a suitable candidate amongst the incumbents in that room, and would also have gone, who is not going to be tainted by the Gupta saga, I wonder? And how far do I need to go back to find somebody who's not going to have small Inyana skeletons? And he settled then on Tito Mboweni. Gina Schoeman, economist at Citibank. It's been a tumultuous week, but on whole, on balance, Gina Schoeman, probably not a bad one.
Yeah, I would say better than expected. We just have to see, I guess, how it ends today with Moody's.
And Moody's, they kind of vary the announcements. We've had announcements as early as 6:45 at night. We've had them as late as 3 a.m. on a Saturday. Is there any indication as to what Moody's delivery time is going to be today?
Well, I think that's actually a bigger talking point, Bruce. In our publication this week, looking ahead at the week, we actually caution to everyone that the dates that they provide to us are actually only potential dates. And if you look at some of Moody's more public commentary recently, they have suggested that sometimes they can wait, sometimes they can postpone the decision. And we actually think that they might want to wait until the MTBPS, particularly given that we have a new finance minister, and particularly because the MTBPS might need to matter more now that the economy has recently fallen into a recession and everyone's downgrading GDP. So, you know, policies like that become very important. So, you know, if they did stick to 12 October, the published date, then typically they do it after market close in the UK. So, yes, that could be anything up until midnight or when we're fast asleep. But there is a good probability here that they actually postpone and wait until they've got more information on the economy, which is likely the MTBPS, given how important it is.
And the medium-term budget policy statement is now less than 2 weeks ago. Tito Mboweni arrived at the National Treasury yesterday. Lots of warm, smiling faces welcoming him. A very different set of faces to the day Des Van Rooyen arrived for his 92-hour flying visit. And a sense of a guy having hit the ground running, and he seems to have done so.
I think so. It's very important that both the public and investors are aware of him, They know his history. A lot of them saw him as governor of the Reserve Bank, and a very strict one, which is always a good thing when you're dealing with public finances. He's being very vocal too, and that might be a good thing. You know, we might see that he's able to stand against some populist policies that get suggested that he knows they can't afford. And he might, even if he knows he can't stop them, he might verbally explain that this is not a good idea. And even that messaging alone, even if he can't stop policies that South Africa can't afford, the messaging from the finance minister that he's aware they can't afford him is very important, because that speaks to your institutional strength. And I must say, that is something that is probably what has saved South Africa most in Moody's case from the inevitable downgrade.
Inevitable downgrade?
Yes. We don't think Moody's, I mean, whether they make the decision today or, you know, after the MTPS, we actually think they'll retain a stable outlook. And again, we're drawing on their comments more recently. They seem quite neutral about things. And we're also not expecting any nasty surprises out of the MTPS. But looking into the future for South Africa, unless we get some real GDP growth going, and you can lift what we call real per capita GDP. So how much GDP are you actually creating per person? Because right now, it's either negative or zero, depending on how you calculate it. And the man on the street can feel that. And that's probably also contributing to a more heightened state of protesting, social instability, or at least public backlash, especially on things like fuel and things like VAT, because people just feel as if they haven't done any better over a decade. So that's why GDP is so important. And unfortunately, if you look over the next 3 years, it's very difficult to see how this economy could grow more than 2%. And that's just not good enough. So when I say inevitable, it might not happen right now, but unless things take a big change for the better, it does look as if it is something we just have to condition ourselves to expect over at least the next 2 years.
But also get ourselves into a more, I mean, nobody steps into a boxing ring or into a wrestling ring or a judo ring or anywhere where there's going to be a fight without doing some training first. And this can almost be a period of getting ourselves, I suppose, downgrade fit, if there's such a thing.
Well, I guess, you know, you do hope that government, Cyril Ramaphosa, takes this opportunity. I mean, it's difficult. You've got the elections coming up, and that makes for more difficult policymaking or stalling policymaking. But you do hope that once at least the elections are passed, you know, people can actually, in that boxing ring, get things done one way or the other, because this country desperately needs some direction.
One gets a sense, and again, it may be wishful thinking, it may be harking back to a past of better financial management of South Africa, one gets a sense that Tito Mboweni is a guy who is not that concerned. I mean, he does have an ego. Everyone does, but he doesn't have the. He's not a people pleaser necessarily. He doesn't feel the need to please the crowd, which is an important characteristic in a finance minister, especially a finance minister in a corner.
Absolutely, and I would say his first test is the news that broke yesterday that government is considering a ceiling for the fuel price, because unless it's something that doesn't impact the fiscus, the budget, they can't possibly intervene into the fuel levy at the moment, unless it's something like the Road Accident Fund to go and actually repair the inefficiencies there. But to take money out of the fiscus and the budget now, just to please people ahead of the election, well, that's his first test going forward. He has to stand against that, because to remove such revenue right now from the budget, well, then I think maybe Moody's would think differently.
It's interesting, your perspective tonight, and that is that Moody's could hold off for another couple of weeks until the medium-term budget policy statement comes out to deliver a pronouncement on their rating. The last thing they want to do today is be seen to say, no, we'll keep a stable outlook, or we'll downgrade our outlook to negative, and then be forced to change it if there's either better than expected or worse than expected news that comes out in that so-called mini-budget.
Yes, absolutely. I've always seen the rating agencies are never really in a rush. And it's not in their best interest to be in a rush. They have to make the correct decision, particularly when they are the last agency with a country in investment grade. They are well aware of the financial economic ramifications to that economy. Even if it's just a negative outlook, you know the markets would start reacting to that because the next step thereafter is the downgrade. So they take these things very seriously. They're not in a rush. They want as much information as possible. And if it's only a few weeks away, well, why wouldn't they wait?
So we've had, what, Ramaphoria, Rama Reality. Now we're waiting for Ramafications, are we?
I'm going to probably use that then, if you don't mind. I'll certainly quote
absolutely.
You on that.
Send it to your global clients. How have they responded, incidentally, before I let you go on this Friday night, so you don't have to listen to any more of my bad jokes? How have they responded to the appointment of Tito Mboweni? I mean, has there been any particularly overt response?
I think they're all quite calm. I think, firstly, there was a sense of relief that this was done in a very calm and professional, you know, process. I think a lot of people give a lot of credit to Nene for actually, you know, putting his hand up and saying, you know, I don't want to drag down the finance ministry and national treasury with me even if I'm only just implicated in this. So that was the first positive, I would say. The second one would be how Ramaphosa actually very calmly went about this, chose a person that is very separate from the story, at least as far as we know, that, you know, some of the previous or more recently former Treasury and Finance Ministers have been associated with in terms of the Guptas. And that's a sense of relief because it doesn't seem as if there's literally any dirt on Mboweni. And then finally, probably the most important one, people know him. It's very important to have a track record. And he's two terms as governor, being very strict, and thereafter seeing a lot of institutional investors and corporate investors when he was international advisor to Goldman Sachs. That means he's been very visible. And, you know, I think some of his tweets might be forgivable given all of that.
Well, we'll see whether or not the tweets translate into anything resembling policy. We live and hope that they don't. Gina Skuman, thank you. Economist at Citibank this evening. Global perspective tonight on the looming ratings decision by Moody's. Not likely to happen today, or possibly might not happen today, based on the fact that the medium-term budget policy statement is around the corner. It would be nice of them to tell us whether or not they will be doing anything on the rating. We'll watch the space to see if it comes through.
The Money Show.
The Markets.
Garth Curry from Sunland Private Wealth, our market commentator this evening. Thank goodness for a Friday bounce, Mr. Curry. Otherwise, you would have been quadruply gloomy.
Good evening, Bruce. It sure was a good finish to the end of a week.
Tell me, this just again, I've forgotten how it played out. It was just ugly and traumatic. It was just, on the whole, there was just this broad-based sell-off that was stemmed from a comment from the IMF that they were worried about the state of the global economy and concerned that there would be contraction in the global economy, and that sent market players heading for the exits.
Correct, Bruce. I mean, IMF put it out, but we've also had a 10-year bull run, so this market's been really bullish, and quite a few of the earnings are priced to perfection on, you know, we've been seeing consistent growth in earnings because of very low interest rates in the US and the world, and we've had good stimulus growth, and then along comes trade wars, and you start seeing interest rates going up in America, and this is slowing down the growth a little bit, and of course, markets buy earnings.
And yes, yesterday's announcement, though, also from the authorities in the United States, that inflation was actually more tempered than they'd expected. That seemed to be a catalyst then for a turnaround in sentiment, although last night the Dow was down 2% and the S&P 500 fell quite sharply too. What was the catalyst then for the turnaround today?
The main catalyst, I think, Bruce, was that the Chinese trade figures and exports rose nearly 15% compared with the same month last year. And when we saw those figures started coming through, you know, it looks like they've almost been resilient against the trade wars. And but you know, these imports were good, and the trade surplus to China was about $34 billion, which is a new record, with America. But, you know, those are going to increase.
Those numbers are interesting because there was the sense, particularly from farmers in places like Idaho and others, that these trade wars are coming. So let's get our exports sorted as quickly as possible. Let's buck the trend on trade wars. This could be an anomaly, a data anomaly. Suddenly, when this sort of frenzied trading dies away and the reality sets in, perhaps that's when we understand the full impact of trade wars.
This could very much, you're absolutely right, Bruce. I mean, this could come back to us and haunt us later because, you know, as you say, people made sure that they were ahead of the curve. And now those figures are coming through. You know, with the low interest rates, we've also seen the bank profits today. Also, a lot of the American banks, JP Morgan, Citibank and Wells Fargo, the results were a bit better than expected because as interest rates go up, you know, the bank profits go up. That and combination of this has really helped them, you know, give the market a nice boost, especially some of these IT stocks. These Asian IT stocks across the board literally went better today, and especially Tencent. And they're a great number with WeChat. I mean, it's just about every Chinese gentleman has or lady has WeChat with them. But so I think
take me through Tencent because it's so important and it's been a subject of much discussion this week in terms of the 40% collapse in the price of Tencent since January and the big sell-off in the last 2 weeks, particularly in Tencent, and suddenly this turnaround, which picks up Naspers by about 8.5% on the day. I mean, this is a market really looking jittery and nervous and reacting badly to the slightest bit of good news and overreacting to the slightest bit of good news.
It started, I think, with the last quarter when, you know, they've had probably for the last 28 quarters, they've actually achieved phenomenal growth. I mean, their growth over the last decade has been about approximately 48%, which is even better than Apple, which is about 34%. So their growth has been absolutely phenomenal in the past. Along comes the last quarter, and they you know, they've always beat expectations, and for the quarter they matched expectation, they didn't beat expectations. So that was the first catalyst in the past quarter. By the way, the next results come out on approximately the 10th, 11th of November, and we'll see what they come out with. But, you know, they could be good. And thereafter, we'll see what happens with the trade wars, especially when the percentage on the trade wars actually increase. But we are seeing a company that's grown dramatically and, you know, has a lot of assets that it can utilize. And Tencent, you know, if I look at Naspers as an example, it's trading at a huge discount to Tencent, you know, in the region of about 42%. But the big thing that everybody's been focusing on is at the beginning of this year, Tencent was trading on a 42 times PE. The historic PE was about 30, if I'm just using a PE phenomenal. It's now dropped down to a 23 PE. So it's quite below the norm and pricing in quite a bit of the bad news. And maybe one of the reasons we also had the spike is because we're sitting on a 23 PE, it's sitting overdone, and these trade figures come out which were better than expected. So that's the spike that we've had today. So for the week, we actually flat on Naspers, it's back where it started. Not all the stocks are in the same boat, and you know some of the markets are still down quite a bit for the week, 5%. But a really nice relief rally at the end. So Tencent, from a valuation perspective, if you look at the sum of the parts in the valuation, in Hong Kong dollars, is still probably worth in the region of, you know, 30 to 40% higher than the current pricing of the sum of the parts. So it's still a phenomenal business, still growing well, and we'll see in the next quarter what those results look like, the 10th, 11th of November.
Mm. And these, we saw, of course, during the week as the sentiment toward the global economy went negative, sentiment towards security and safety rose, and the gold price rocketed upwards, and it's probably been the best week for gold since, I don't know, 2016 or thereabouts.
A 10% run in the gold price, Bruce, just shows you the sentiment. And, you know, 28th currency, everybody rushed back into gold. They pulled back a little bit today. But gold's had a phenomenal run in this last week, which is just showing there's a lot of nervousness. What's also happened, though, is when the markets get nervous, people don't, because they've got a big capital gain in their individual stocks, they sometimes hedge with the index, so they go and short the index, and then every share in the index is affected, or vice versa, they get into the gold index and all those golds get pulled up with it. So we had a good run in the gold sector, and it was nice to see a 10% run in those gold shares. But still,
there was another upside as well. And yeah, I mean, the gold price rallied strongly. You get that 10% increase, and the oil price came down. Let's not forget that particular upside, a decline in oil from $85 down to $80 a barrel. I'll take that.
Yeah, you know, they're saying in Iran, everybody was pricing in that with the tariffs against Iran, that they would produce zero oil, export zero oil. and it's come out that it won't be zero oil. There will be some oil coming out of Iran, and that's helped the oil price drift back a bit. Not enough, I must say, but it definitely has helped.
Most certainly has. A couple of other stories around today. A PSG trading update. It seemed fairly decent. Growth of over 20% still. PSG keeps on ticking along. Big investments in there. Curo and Stadio. Stadio, I think they've got a big stake in Stadio. And, of course, there's the mighty Capitec.
They had a good run again today, Bruce. And it also helped that whole financial sector. With the Rand picking up, we're waiting to see what Moody's, as you mentioned earlier in the show, we're waiting for Moody's announcement later on, which we think will be relieved. But we're also sitting with the Rand firmed up quite nicely this week. And on the back of that, a lot of the Rand hedges went up. So we saw most of your banks, you mentioned earlier, FNB had a nice bump to the PSG when the figures came better, Capitec, even the likes of a Sanlam, and most of your financial stocks had a really good rise today, a nice rebound, Standard Bank and all of them. And also your retailers, of course, picked up quite nicely. I mean, I saw, just to mention something else there which you didn't mention, was Tiger Brands and Pioneer Foods, which have been really falling hard, have turned around and bounced quite nicely, nearly 5%.
And Tiger Brands, of course, the story there today was the back in the Poloni business, their meat processing plant, one of the big ones, back in operation today, which is going to be welcome.
Oh, correct. So Germiston, the Germiston factory will be reopening and the processing facilities up and running again, which is very good news for them, I'm sure.
Garth Curry, thank you. Senior Portfolio Manager at Sanlam Private Wealth. A very good Friday after a very horrible Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday and Thursday.
702. Bruce is on Twitter at Bruce Business.
This is The Money Show. Best bits in a moment. Plus, we'll play the Brutal Biz Quiz. There's $3,000 up for grabs if you are the whiz of the Brutal Biz Quiz this Friday. Hopefully, we've got somebody who's more of a team player. We've been very selfish recently. You put money into the pot, and suddenly people go, I'm going to answer all the questions. And they then set forth to answer all the questions. So be a little bit more generous. Be a bit more kind. Or play and take it all for yourself. On the next Money Show, our Make Money Monday special edition guest is the singer and Idols judge, Unati Ngai. Our business book feature, we'll talk to Mkuseli Jack. He's got a brand new book out. It's called To Survive and Succeed from Farm Boy to Businessman. And it's a tearjerker. And I'm looking forward to reviewing that. We'll also look at all the big stories of the day. And of course, review the big ratings decision and the impact that'll have on your ability, hopefully one day, to retire.
The Money Show with Bruce Whitfield. Live, online, smartphones, DSTV, and 92.7 and 106
FM. Time for the best bits of The Money Show, and lots of you do listen to the podcast, and thank you for doing so. And many of you share the podcast. Thank you for doing so. And many of you don't know the podcast exists. Where have you been? We've got the podcast of The Money Show. Goes up each and every single day. Just about as soon as we finish on air, we get it posted as soon as possible. You can then listen to it at your leisure. You can share it with your friends. You can listen to the bits you want. You can slide. You can fork. You can scroll through, and you can take the bits that you want. And we encourage you to listen to our podcast, particularly if you've heard half a thing on the radio. And so often you listen to something. Did he really say that? Or did she really say that? Did they really say that? And you can go and listen to the podcast and get a good perspective as to what's been going on. If you thought the stormy season in Cape Town was over with the arrival of the southeaster this week and would blow all of the rain away, you are looking at the wrong storm. There's a corporate battle brewing in Cape Town, and it's getting very, very nasty indeed. A group of Grand Parade's investments, disgruntled investors have been lining up candidates to replace existing board members. The unhappy shareholders have got four people they want to put onto the board. And we've got the Grand Parade's investments guys saying we're willing to replace two of the directors. That's led to a difference of opinion. And I spoke to one of those disgruntled shareholders, Paul Whitburn, director and portfolio manager at Roosendaal Partners. And this is how he put his case.
The business has really struggled over the last few years. It used to be a gambling company, was very successful, and about 6 years ago, they changed direction and moved into the what they called the food journey and brought Burger King, Baskin Robbins, and all these other businesses into South Africa. Unfortunately, that hasn't been successful, and they've probably spent about 1.5 billion rand on capital and accumulated losses in these businesses. And the share price is down 70%, dividends have halved, and it's just not going the way that shareholders want it to go. We found that the board There's corporate governance issues. We found the
that's a very broad thing to say. There are corporate governance issues. Specifically, what are your concerns?
So, I mean, really relating around the board. So a lot of the board members have been on this board for 20-odd years. So, you know, good corporate governance, you're not considered independent if you've been on a board for longer than 10 years. So, you know, you need good corporate governance in terms of capital allocation and what's going to go on in the business. So, you know, really what this business needs is a skill set to help these food businesses thrive. And we feel that the current board members don't have the skill sets that will help the food businesses thrive and make money for shareholders.
Now, you're always going to get pushback from a company which is sort of started up as a community investment scheme where many of the directors are personal friends of the founders, and it does become a charged environment, and a charged environment it certainly is. Dr. Hassan Adams, the chairman of Grand Parade Investments, did defend the company's position, and he is not going to go down without a fight.
Let me just say, you know, that Paul is a pretty brave liar, you know. I'm surprised that he's come onto air and made these statements, which is profoundly untrue, you know.
Which statements are untrue?
He's saying that we have half the dividends, we have done all sorts of things that is wrong. Can I just ask the question? I mean, Paul Whitburn only came on board as a shareholder, you know, just recently, a couple of weeks ago. And if you look at how they've been buying up shares in the last week through Rosendahl, it tells you that they have an agenda. And quite frankly, you know, they still don't have a large interest in GPI. I mean, if you look at what he's saying about the business, I mean, we have been paying our shareholders without fail dividends for 21 years.
But the question here, Hassan, is whether or not GPI could be doing better. I mean, you're trading at a 70% discount to your net asset value, for example. Surely getting some new board members with some new skills onto that board is a positive for everybody.
I don't disagree with that at all, Bruce. I went to them through PSG and offered them an olive branch because I acknowledge that we are in a phase of changing the makeup of the board. And I offered them an olive branch to put two of their four members on our board as a compromise instead of disrupting everything. They came back and said, no, it's all or nothing. They're going to take over this company. This is a hostile takeover.
Did they use those words? I'm not so sure, but certainly that is the feeling of Hassan Adams, who is the executive chairman, the founder of Grand Parade Investments, the guys who brought Burger King, Baskin Robbins, and Dunkin', used to be called Dunkin' Donuts, to the country. Two-time Pulitzer Prize-winning investigative French-American journalist. Boy, oh boy, that's a mouthful. Guy who wrote a book. A guy called John Carreyrou was our guest this week, the author of a book called Bad Blood, Secrets and Lies in a Silicon Valley Startup. Now, it's the full inside story, breathtaking rise, the shocking collapse of Theranos, a multi-billion dollar biotech startup. A woman called Elizabeth Holmes, widely seen as a female Steve Jobs, brilliant woman, a Stanford dropout, and she promised to revolutionize the medical industry with a machine that would do blood testing significantly faster, significantly easier than existing products, except she lied and the tests were faked and it all came horribly unstuck. I asked John Carreyrou if he ever met and did a one-on-one interview with the elusive Elizabeth Holmes.
No, she never agreed to meet with me. I started asking for an interview about 5.5 months before we went to press with my first story. So I started asking for an interview with her in April, late April of 2015. And she refused to grant me one. And then after our first story went to press, she claimed that I hadn't taken into account the company's responses, which, of course, we had. But I thought it was a height of irony, given that she wouldn't even speak to me or meet with me. And then I went back and tried to engage with her again when I went on book leave to write the book in the fall of 2016. And again, via her spokeswoman at Theranos, she declined to speak with me. So the closest I ever came to being close to Elizabeth Holmes was when she gave a speech at the American Association for Clinical Chemistry's annual meeting in Philadelphia, which is a scene in the book, in the last couple chapters of the book. And I was about 20 yards from her. She was on stage trying to, turn public opinion around by doing a demonstration of her product. And I was about 20 yards away. And that's the closest I ever got to her.
And I mean, the reports are Jennifer Lawrence will play Elizabeth Holmes. This has got all the makings of a great sort of Facebooky sort of movie. I mean, it may not have ever become Facebook, but the movie's going to be good.
I think there's enough drama and enough yes, colorful and outrageous characters to make for a good movie. And you're right, Jennifer Lawrence is attached to play.
Yeah, it's going to be a good one. Watch that movie when it comes out. Bad Blood. Oof. And lots of bad blood in that particular story. Well, Monday, Make Money Monday special edition guest, the former Springbok, the founder, co-founder of a media firm called Retroactive, Brian Habana, was our Make Money Monday special edition guest. And he joined us and explained how he managed to stay away from trouble in the public eye and how he's always managed his money in the transition period. For a lot of sports people, they really struggle with this sudden wealth that lands in their laps. For Brian Habana, though, he's been very smart in the way in which he's handled it.
I think I'm pretty fortunate. I think I was brought up pretty level-headed. So, again, I think I'm very different from many other players of colour growing up in South Africa in that I didn't grow up underprivileged. I got given the best opportunities, went to the best schools. So, I tried my best at, staying very low key, from a flashy, if one calls that, point of view. But, you did dabble in buying one or two new cars, I think. But again, try to hopefully, throughout my career, stay as level headed as possible when it comes to, financial aspects. Obviously, given that a sporting career is, very short and compared to life, and you're obviously earning a lot of money at a very younger age than most, for a much more compressed sort of time to make sure that you look after that as well as possible, because it doesn't go on forever. The well eventually does dry up when you get to the age of 35, and again you go from earning a salary equivalent possibly to a CEO of a company and step out of that and into the real world. So if you haven't financially made some good strides and understood, the savings and, making sure that your investments are hopefully paid off and that you step out of being a professional sportsman purely debt-free or close to being debt-free as possible, then you do sort of struggle. And I think that's within the transition period where a lot of people struggle. All of a sudden, you have to stop buying your own clothes, making your own flight bookings. You have to start investing in cars because you've been sponsored with cars for most of your career. So I think there's a lot of challenges that are facing, professional sportsmen, getting into the real world. But I think I've been pretty fortunate that I've had some good people around me.
Brian Habana, what a lovely guy. The former Springbok, the co-founder of a business called Retroactive, our Make Money Monday special edition guest. You can get our podcasts on our 702 website, 702.co.za, capetalk.co.za. You can get that in the iTunes store. You can get wherever you get your podcasts from. You can get the Money Show podcast. You can subscribe. You can download. You can listen backwards for all I care. Really, it might make more sense, actually. In a moment, play the Brutal Biz Quiz. 3,000 Rand to give away, courtesy of us, 702 and Cape Talk, and those nice people at Mercantile Bank. Your first question, which South African finance minister has a song after him? We've had 10 finance ministers in the last 25 years. One of those has a song in their honour. Which finance minister? 011-883-0702-021-446-0567. Give us a call on The Money Show.
The Money Show.
The Brutal Biz Quiz.
The Brutal Biz Quiz on a Friday night, brought to you by Mercantile Bank. We got 3,000 Rand to give away to the whiz of the Brutal Biz Quiz. Up first this evening, Michael in Roodepoort. Which South African finance minister has a song named in their honor?
Bruce Itumbuweni.
How does the song go? Does it go a bit like this? Is that the one?
That's the one.
Okay, shasha. Let's see whether or not we can shasha with you this evening, Michael. Yes, Casper Nieuwveld, congratulations. Former Reserve Bank Governor returning as Finance Minister to replace Nhlanhla Nene this week. Elizabeth Holmes, often compared to Steve Jobs about blood profiling business. That business has crumbled. What is the name of the business that Elizabeth Holmes drove into the ground?
Oh, idea.
No sha-sha for you this evening, I'm afraid. Michael, thanks for playing. Jenny in Waverley tonight. What is the name of the business that Elizabeth Holmes was... Oh, Jenny's not playing. Jenny's going, I'm not answering that. And she's just disappearing. Tipsy in Midrand. Tipsy?
Hello.
Midrand. Hello.
Yes, I'm listening.
Elizabeth Holmes, what was the business that she ran? What was the business called?
She ran, I think it's Property.
No, I'm afraid not, Tepsi. Is it Louis and Rudolph Works?
Yes, hello. The business what is the Theranos.
Theranos, absolutely right. Brilliant Stanford dropout, and she started this business which revolutionized the medical industry. But, and for it all, the wheels came off. What does the V in VBS Mutual Bank stand for?
Vendor.
Vendor is absolutely right. Vendor Building Society. And Vendor Building Society, the report into that collapse came out this week. Pip Buerta served as Minister of Foreign Affairs under three apartheid presidents. He then became a minister in Nelson Mandela's administration. What portfolio did he fill?
Oh, I think you got me now. Sorry. I don't know.
Louis, but you did well. Thank you very much for playing. Is it Livus in Boksburg? What job did Pik Buerta do in Nelson Mandela's cabinet?
He was Foreign Affairs Minister.
Not in Nelson Mandela's cabinet, Livus, I'm afraid. Lerateng in Midrand.
I'm going to please get the question again. Sorry, I didn't hear.
Pik Buerta, in the Nelson Mandela administration, he'd been foreign affairs minister under three apartheid presidents. He then joined Nelson Mandela's cabinet as what minister?
He was the minister of energy and mineral and energy affairs.
Absolutely right, Lerateng. 3,000 Rand finding its way to you. You're the whiz of the Brutal Biz Quiz on this Friday night, getting that question right. The last question was my favorite, and I should have asked it, and I wish I had. Who told Elon Musk to get off Twitter and get some sleep this week? That was Richard Branson. But congratulations to you, Lerateng in Midrand. 3,000 Rand, courtesy of 702 Cape Talk and Mercantile Bank, the business bank inspired by entrepreneurs. That's it from The Money Show for this week. We look forward to chatting again on Monday. Enjoy the weekend. Good night.